get older, losing my head. Many years from now, will you still be sending me a valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I'd been out till 3:15, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good afternoon. This is Dr. Ralph Stahl with What Should You Expect at Your Age? The answer to that question is a lot. And my listeners, especially the older adults and caregivers out there, shouldn't settle for less. The following is a list of some of the things you should expect as you get older, read by my patient, Mr. John Schulterer, 75 years young. He was disappointed when it rained yesterday because he wanted to get out on the golf course. Instead, I had him read The Expectations for Older Adults.
9 Expectations for Older Adults. You should expect to be listened to, valued, and respected. You should expect knowledgeable and compassionate health care. You should expect to be as pain-free as possible and to be given medications that will only make you feel better, not worse. You should expect never to be abandoned or forgotten. You should expect not to live a life of loneliness or depression. You should expect never to be the object of prejudice or abuse. You should expect to get the help you need to live life to the fullest. You should expect to live up to your potential and have hope for the future. And lastly, you should expect never to be taken advantage of except for your talents, knowledge, and wisdom.
We had a lot of fun in the studio last week when my guests were representatives of the Red Hat Society, ladies who strive for fun and friendship after 50 years of age. They clearly demonstrated they have a lot of fun and that they have lots of friends they share it with. Today's show is dedicated to medications, how they can help, how they can hurt, how they can prevent problems in the future. In a few minutes, we'll start taking your calls at 855-6848. If you can't get through or don't want to talk on the air, you can mail your questions and requests for information to the station at WHLV 1270 AM, 225 Delaware Avenue, Buffalo, New York, 14202, or email me, drstall, Dr. Stahl, at whatshouldyouexpect.com. Drop me a line also if you would like free copies of a self-assessment booklet I put together that may help identify important problems you haven't yet discussed with your doctor. Additional information related to the topics discussed and audios of the shows can be found on the website whatshouldyouexpect.com. All one word, whatshouldyouexpect.com. My guests on today's show are Carl and Tina Fiedelkorn, pharmacists from the UB School of Pharmacy. Welcome, Carl. Welcome, Tina. Please tell everyone a little bit about yourselves, and why don't you also share some personal experiences you may have had with regard to medications that your friends, family, and others have bent your ear about.
My name's Carl Fiedelkorn, obviously. I'm Assistant Dean for Student Affairs and Professional Relations at the school. I received my pharmacy degree back in 78. I just received my AARP card, so I classify as...
Congratulations, excellent.
And I worked for an independent pharmacy for a few years, and I was a supervisor with Phase Drugs for about 18 years. And then I switched over to university, and I've been teaching there ever since.
Wow, tremendous experience. Very diverse and well-rounded.
Thank you.
And how about you, Tina?
Well, I'm an independent consultant pharmacist. I've been doing consultant work for long-term care for the last 19 years. Prior to that, my experience was hospital pharmacy. I'm a certified geriatric pharmacist, glad to be here. It's great.
Well, it's great to have you here, and what we hope to do is leave you with 3 take-home messages. Number 1, medications can help you live longer and healthier. 2, medications can make you miserable. And 3, keep your pharmacist and doctor informed about all the medications you are taking, including prescription, over-the-counter, and herbal remedies. To get us in the mood, let's first listen to a hit song from 1959, Love Potion Number 9.
I took my troubles down to Madame Rue. You know that gypsy with the gold cap too. She's got a pad on 34th and Vine, selling little bottles of Love Potion Number 9. I told her that I was a flop with chicks. I've been this way since 1956. She looked at my palm and she made a magic sign. She said, what you need is Love Potion Number 9. She bent down and turned around and gave me a wink. She said, I'm gonna mix it up right here in the sink. It smelled like perfect time and looked like India ink. I held my nose, I closed my eyes. I didn't know it was a day or night. I saw the kiss and everything in sight. But when I kissed the cop at 34th and Vine, he broke my little bottle of Love Potion Number 9. The day or night, I saw the kiss and everything in sight. But when I kissed the cop at 34th and Vine, he broke my little bottle of Love Potion Number 9. Love Potion Number 9. Love Potion Number 9.
Great song, and that song talks about the pros and cons of something you can ingest in your body, Love Potion Number 9. Well, I want to divide today's show into two parts. In the first half, we'll talk about medications that you can only get with a prescription from a doctor. After the break, we'll discuss medications you can buy on your own, over-the-counter drugs and herbal remedies. And I want to highlight those medications also that can help prevent problems in the future. First, let's listen to some comments from my patients about medications they have taken.
Now, of all the medications that you've taken in your life, is there one that's helped you the most?
No, I don't think so.
Is there one that's hurt you the most, or that you're sorry you started taking it?
I don't think so. Took Vasodec, and that was bad for me. I stopped urinating. That doesn't sound very nice, but that's what happened. Lisinopril. Took away my taste buds, that's why I hate it. Can't taste my food anymore. But I take my medicine, and I eat my food, even though it all tastes like oatmeal.
I don't think you ever told me that.
Over-the-counter, CoQ10. When I started to take that, I just kind of perked up and felt so much more alive. I just felt so good. Extract Alpha, I think they called it.
Okay.
And it was to perk you up or make you think better or whatever, then I took it. And since I've stopped it, I'll never stop thanking you because it just turned me around again.
Well, the Lipitor has definitely brought my cholesterol down.
His Acetex helps me, helps my stomach. And I don't know whether the Dextra helps me or not. That's what I'd like to know.
A tremendous prescription for me is called Ectos. Since I'm diabetic, evidently Ectos tends to make your pancreas produce more of its own insulin. That's my understanding. Since I've been on Ectos, my readings every morning are between 85 and 105, exactly where I want to be.
Sleeping pills and pain pills.
What's happened with those?
The next morning I think I'm going to die. I don't think I'm going to live. You know, they just knock me out. They just make me feel all gone.
And she said that it's very good. Lutein helps with stabilizing your macular degeneration. And they prescribe Periodent, and I take that twice a day.
I simply take them because she likes them. I've had no problems all my life.
What do you think about medications in general?
Frequently they're unnecessary, and many times they shouldn't be taken, probably.
Well, there you have it. There's quite a potpourri of issues that were discussed there. And any comments offhand?
Well, a lot of medications you take for a lot of different conditions, chronic conditions, they're supposed to help enhance the quality of life. And a lot of the people I noticed when they were talking on this little mini interview had mentioned they were having other problems. I picked up on a lady with the sleep medications and the pain medications, and she's probably having an additive effect to all the adverse reactions of those. So she was saying that she was having real problems staying alert.
Well, I also think the other thing is that you have to think about is whether or not the drug, the benefits of the drug outweigh the risks. Definitely, if it doesn't enhance your quality of life, then you really need to talk to your physician and pharmacist about whether or not this is the appropriate drug for your condition.
Now, quality of life, and for a pharmacist, how do you interpret that for your patients?
Well, I think quality of life would enhance the way you can do your activities of every day. So if, say, for example, the woman who was taking pain medications, obviously if she's suffering from pain, she may not be able to be as physically active and therefore can't participate, whether it be gardening or exercise or whatever. However, if she's given a pain medication that corrects the pain but she's groggy all the time and she's falling, well, that doesn't really enhance her quality of life. It may put her at a greater detriment in terms of falling and breaking a hip in that case.
And I think quality of life is different for different people. I know in a clinic that I work at, I interview a lot of asthmatic patients and patients with respiratory disease. And one of the things we ask them is, you know, how often you're getting your symptoms, you're wheezing or coughing. And, you know, they say, oh, I'm doing really well, I'm feeling good and all this. And then I say, well, are you getting up during the night? Well, yeah. And I say, well, are you coughing during the night? Oh, yeah, 5 or 6 times during the night, but that's normal. And I said, no, that's not normal. I said, you're losing your sleep. You're not going to get any better that way. And we have to eliminate that problem. And then a month or two down the road, they come back and they say, geez, you know, I'm not coughing at night. My husband's much happier because I'm not waking him up every night coughing and things like that. So you have to look at that issue, too.
Now, what about the people who mentioned vitamin-type remedies, herbal remedies, the CoQ10, the lutein, and things like that?
Well, I thought that was the second half of this program.
You can touch on that right now. You can touch on that.
There's a lot of herbal remedies out there, and, of course, there's a lot of OTC remedies out there. And the biggest thing that I have and the biggest concern I have is, one, do they really work? Is it more of a placebo effect than anything? Two, are they buying good quality herbal I don't want to call them medications because they're not medications. They're herbals, herbals and diet supplements. You know, are they buying good quality supplements from a good quality manufacturer? You know, and that's the kind of thing I look at. Most of your brand name pharmaceutical companies also come out with their own lines of herbal medications. Here I go, herbal medications again. I got caught. And that's a good thing to look at. And the best people to ask is your doctor or pharmacist about that.
You mentioned the placebo effect. Can you explain that a little bit?
The placebo effect is where somebody will give you something and they'll say, you know, and somebody says, well, I had this headache and, you know, I've had it for like 3 days. And they say, oh, I got something really good for you. Here, take this because I bought this at this health food store and it's going to eliminate your headache in the next 5 minutes. And I guarantee it. And, you know, we've used this for years and it's wonderful. And then the person takes it and 5 minutes later they say, this is wonderful. You know, just absolutely, my headache's gone. You know, what did you give me? And I said, well, I gave you a sugar cube out of the sugar bowl or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And it's actually, and you know, people, especially with pain, a lot of it has to do with perception, your perception of what something's going to help you and how's that going to help you. And a lot of people live on that. You know, Aunt Molly took it for the last 20 years and it's great, and I believe Aunt Molly, and it's really going to cure me and you're really going to go. And is it really going to work or really not? That's what you really have to look at.
It's kind of like power of suggestion, you know.
Now, there were specific drug classes that were mentioned by some of the patients. One was ACE inhibitors, which are commonly used for high blood pressure, and also congestive heart failure. Can you comment on those? They're widely used. They're very good drugs in many circumstances. What can people look out for with those?
Back to me again, huh? They're very good drugs. They're very safe drugs in most instances. They are more expensive. You look at some of the older medications used for high blood pressure. You know, a lot of people were started on diuretics, and a lot of the other older drugs had other side effects, made you dizzy, and things of that nature. along came ACE inhibitors, and instead of having to take those other drugs maybe two or three or four times a day, now you can take most ACE inhibitors maybe once a day. And the amount of side effects is much, much lower. But there's still side effects. One of the most common, and they did not mention this here, one of the most common ones you get is a cough. And it's just a very dry cough that doesn't want to go away. You're not bringing up any phlegm, and it's what we call a nuisance cough. And again, people are up during the night. One of the first things I ask these asthmatic patients, are you taking any medication for blood pressure? And lo and behold, occasionally they say, well, I'm taking this. It's an ACE inhibitor. And I tell the physician, maybe we should switch them to something else. Cough goes away. That's what it was due to.
And I've seen that in my practice many times, actually. And The ACE inhibitors, can you just tell us a few of the brand names and generic names so people get an idea of what drugs we're talking about?
Oh, sir, now I can have me pronounce all these generic drug names.
Whatever comes off the top of your head is fine.
There's Zazotec, Capitan, Lisinopril, Clinopril. I think the other thing that's very important to mention, whether it be the ACE inhibitors or any of the other drugs, is that you need to keep an open dialogue with your pharmacist and your physician. There are times that people kind of take things as a given, that if you take this drug and it just goes along with it, like the annoying cough, you don't have to suffer from that. The other thing is that there has to be close monitoring of these medications, because they do affect the way your kidney functions and how your blood pressure gets regulated. And if they're not being monitored appropriately, you could have other side effects, such as you could get dizzy because the blood pressure drops too quickly. And then it puts you as an elderly person, you may have a greater risk for falling. That tends to be a really high risk rate, worrying about broken hips and that sort of thing. So I think it's very important to keep an open dialogue. The same with the herbal supplements you were talking about.
We're going to talk about those in the second half.
Yeah, but I just wanted to mention that all these medications work hand in hand. It's not compartmentalized that, okay, you just take a blood pressure medication and it takes care of blood pressure, and you take care of a medication just for blood sugar, and that takes care of that. They all interact in their own way. So it really is very, very important to make sure that your pharmacist and your physician know all the drugs, all the supplements that you are taking.
And some people get medications from different pharmacies for different reasons. The prices may be better at one pharmacy compared to another, and that makes it very difficult to track what someone's on.
That's right. That's true.
You mentioned close monitoring, and one of the things that, we'll go back to these ACE inhibitors, that it can cause a high potassium, and it can affect your kidney function, as that one patient mentioned. And it's very important that when your doctor gives you a prescription to get a blood test to monitor the drug, that you go for it when the doctor wants you to go for it. Sometimes if you wait a month, you could get into trouble. If you've been on the drug for that month and your potassium is building up gradually, it can become very problemsome. So you have to go for these follow-up tests to ensure that you're not getting hurt by the medication.
I think it's also important when you said about blood tests and monitoring. Patients can also self-monitor themselves, obviously through blood pressure, make sure it's bringing their blood pressure down, their blood glucose if they're diabetic, things of that nature. And that's important to do that too.
The other thing is, when you talk about high potassium levels, medications and foods, there are certain foods that may be higher in potassium. And when you pick up your prescription from a pharmacy, the pharmacist put all these little colorful stickers, which we call auxiliary stickers, that help explain how to properly take your medications. Do make a point to read them. Do make a point to discuss them with your pharmacist if you don't understand, because medications are expensive. So if you're going to take a medication that's going to cost you a lot of money, take it the right way so you can optimize it and get the most bang out of your buck.
Now, we are taking phone calls. We want you to call in and ask your particular questions about medications. And the phone number here, 855-6848. We're ready to take your calls whenever you want to. I want to continue on and continue talking about the medications that were brought up by the patients. There was Aptos, which is a newer medication for diabetes. And what can you say about diabetes medications in general these days?
they're really expensive. Well, I think there are the medications that are out there for diabetes are getting much more fine-tuned. We're being able to control the blood sugars more regular than having the high peaks and the drops in sugars. But at the same token, they also need a lot of close monitoring, especially as you get older. Your body functions are not working as well as they were when you were 21, and so these medications also can affect the way your body works, just like the ACE inhibitors. So there are certain things that you do need to monitor for. The doctors will probably have liver function tests, the profiles, prescribed for you, along with checking your blood sugar to see if you're in the proper range. And nowadays, it's really not uncommon for a diabetic to be on several different medications, not just one. So it gets to be a juggling act, how to take all these medications at the right time and to remember to take them.
Now, we'll dedicate a program in the future to diabetes, a whole program to diabetes, but why is it so important to take your diabetes medication? There's lots of problems you can get down the road from diabetes.
Well, I mean, you want to keep your blood sugar as tightly controlled as you possibly can, because it eliminates a lot of those future problems. And a lot of diabetics, you know, they're young, they're healthy, they might be in their mid-30s or 40s, and they say, you know, I feel fine, and, you know, I play basketball and all that, and it really doesn't affect me that much. And it's important to realize that diabetes not only affects the blood sugar, but also affects the tiny little capillaries and veins that you have in your body in places that in the future it's going to affect it. So places like your heart, the small capillaries there, the small capillaries in your kidneys, and the small little veins and capillaries in your eye. And those are some of the biggest problems that diabetics have later on. They get heart disease, kidney disease, ocular problems, things of that nature.
Well, I have some statistics here that are a few years old, but they're still fairly accurate. 1.5 billion prescriptions are written in the United States each year. 1/3 of those are written for people 65 and over.
That's correct.
It's now 3.1 billion.
Now it's 3.1 billion.
Yes.
Okay, so these statistics were only a few years old. What's accounted for that tremendous increase?
Well,
is it the television ads?
It's probably a direct consumer advertising advertisement. It is more people in certain areas get more drug coverage. Anytime a copay card prices for your medication is dropped, people have a tendency to be on more things. A lot of different reasons. The population has grown and expanded. The baby boomers have grown and expanded. The baby boomers now, which represent approximately 76 million out of the 283 million people in the United States, want to stay healthier longer, and they're more educated and on and on. We live in a good society. Parents laid down a good framework in society for us. So, the American society is more affluent, so we want more. Yeah, I always tell people are surprised at my age, and I always say, well, I didn't look like my father when he was 50. You know, I'm 50, and I can play basketball and do everything my dad couldn't back then. And it was a lot of the things that they laid down, a lot of, advancements in medicine and things like that, that we do and we want to do. And a lot of medications are over the counter now, too.
Well, I also think our society is very much a quick fix society. I mean, you talk about weight control. That's a great example. Everybody wants a quick fix. Nobody wants to exercise and diet. We just want to pop a pill
operation.
That's right, right, gastric bypass. But I think also the other thing is, the other side of the coin is that there are so many disease states now that are the guidelines, the practice guidelines by the consensus of discipline, whether it be diabetes or heart disease, there are multiple drug standards now. It's not just a one medication fix. So we're finding that certain disease states are very, very complex, and therefore you can't just have one drug to take care of a particular problem.
So if you go to several specialists, each one prescribes their cocktail as recommended by their specialty society that does the best job possible at your problem, but it adds to the total number of medications you have, which adds to the possibility of having an adverse effect,
right,
a bad effect of the medication.
And then that's where we get into what we call polypharmacy, where somebody may have a reaction to a particular drug, And it may be from prescribed by his specialist. And then he goes back to his primary physician and he says, oh, I'm complaining of acid reflux. You know, it's coming, I'm getting this burning sensation up my throat. So then his primary physician will prescribe another medication for that symptom when, in fact, that may be an adverse effect of the initial drug, which could be rectified maybe by changing the dose, adjusting the dose, or changing to a different product.
What are some of the drugs that can predispose to reflux, for example?
Well, any of the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, which a lot of them, you know, people are most familiar with things like ibuprofen or Motrin, Naprosyn, or Advil. A lot of the ones over the counter now, Aleve, Advil, Nuprin, all those should be taken with something to eat. If somebody has predisposition to a gastrointestinal problem ahead of time, say you already had a past ulcer or a sensitive stomach or irritable bowel, that's just going to inflame it even more.
Actually, I had a personal experience with my dad. My father turned 80 this month, and he is taking Vioxx, which is a type of non-steroidal, and he's getting these headaches, so now he started taking handfuls of Advil and Aleve, and all of a sudden he's vomiting. He's really sick to the stomach, and I had talked to him last week, and he was complaining of these symptoms, and I said, what are you taking? And he proceeded to list all these medications of all the same category, and I said, Dad, you need to stop everything, and you need to call your doctor tomorrow. I called him back yesterday to see how he was doing, and lo and behold, he said, I feel so much better. You really know what you're talking about.
Well, that's where the problem comes in with the brand names, which might seem like different medications, but when you come back to the generic name, they're all the same. And acetaminophen is like that. Tylenol, you get that as the non-aspirin pain reliever in the generic form.
That's why it's very important to, no matter where you go, you should really only go to one primary physician and what I call one primary pharmacist. And when you go to a pharmacist, and I realize people want to save money and maybe they get something on a discount at one place, and I know people go through the internet and a few other places, but it's very important just to tell your pharmacist, your local pharmacist, your local physician, everything that you're on. Because if you go back to your physician or you go to your pharmacist, and geez, I got all these problems, I had really bad gastroesophageal reflux disease, I'm burping up acid, I got very bad heartburn, and the pharmacist looks on the file and says, geez, there's nothing there that causes that, and what else are you getting? And a lot of people are timid because, I didn't get it from you, I really don't want to tell you that I'm on that, but it's very important to do that.
Well, this is tremendous information. I think it's extremely important for patients to take note of this and stay in touch with their primary doc and their primary pharmacist. We're going to go to a short break, and I want to talk after the break. We'll get into those herbal remedies and the over-the-counter medications, but I also want to talk about medications that can prevent problems down the road, and that accounts, I'm sure, for why there are so many more prescriptions being written. I think we're more aware of what can help us down the road, and we do try to prevent problems because we know we're living longer. So let's go to a break. We're going to hear a tune from Huey Lewis and the News. It's called I Want a New Drug. Make sure you listen to the words.
Put a bone in the natural time. I make my eyes too. Put a bone in the air.
back now with my guests today, Carl and Tina Fiebelkorn from the UB School of Pharmacy. The phone lines are open for your calls, 855-6848. That song describes every patient's and pharmaceutical company's ideal, doesn't it? The perfect drug. I don't know what kind of drug he was talking about, but why don't you comment on the types of things that were mentioned? There are a lot of different side effects and positive effects that Huey Lewis wanted the drug to provide for him. Well, no comments. Then we should go on to the next. We should go on to the next topic. All right, no comments.
We might come later.
No one's going to touch that. Anyway, let's go on to herbal. Let's first finish off the prescription medications. What are the three most important things for people to be concerned about with prescription medications?
I really thought of about four, and maybe Tina here can add on to that. First, are they working? Are they working correctly? Meaning, is it dropping your blood pressure like it's supposed to? Is it, if you're on an antibiotic, is your infection going away, your fever going down, or your cough being relieved, or are you able to go back to work? Are there any kind of adverse effects? You know, are you getting diarrhea from it, or you're breaking out in a rash, or you're urinating too much, or things of that nature, which you should go back and report to your doctor and pharmacist both, so they both can mark it in the records. The third thing that I thought of was a drug interaction. I think one of the statistics, I think if you're on three or more drugs now, you have over a 90% chance of a drug interaction occurring. And not all drug interactions are bad things, and not all occur. They, you know, a lot of them are very minor, but some can be very serious. And this is a thing that pharmacists constantly watch and look after. And you know, we have sophisticated computer programs that look at things like that, too, and the occurrence of that.
Now you had an issue with your father, I believe.
Actually,
it may not have been an interaction, but a toxicity.
Well, what he had done, my brother had taken my father to another physician that he wanted him to see, and so on and so forth. And it was actually just one of these outpatient clinics real quick, and because he said, geez, I think Dad should be worked up for something else. And while they were there, they changed my father's DIG dose, Lanoxin dose, and without letting me know, And several weeks later, I happened to see my dad at a party, whatever, and my dad looked very pale. He was shaking. He was cold. And I said, Dad, what's going on? And he said, geez, I haven't felt good at all, and, on and on. And as I talked to him further, I realized, I said to myself, gosh, if I couldn't swear, he was in DIG toxicity, just by the way he looked, he acted, all his symptoms, what he was telling me. So finally I turned to my brother and I said, has he been taking any other medications? Oh, I took him to this other doctor and he increased his dose. So I went back to his regular doctor and ran a DIG level and he was toxic.
Now, can you say a few words about antibiotics and how they should be taken? I know when I get a prescription for antibiotics, it's very difficult when you start feeling better to make sure you take all the pills in that bottle.
Sure. But one other thing, I want to mention my fourth point before you get to antibiotics.
Sorry about that.
Okay. My fourth point, and this is especially true of seniors. As I mentioned to you, my dad just turned 90 and Tina's dad just turned 80. And one of the things we discovered they do, they save every medication they've ever been on. My dad's got medications. I just turned 50 and he's got medications he had hidden away that were older than I was.
Because you never know.
Because they always said you never know. And it's very important, once you're done with the medication or once you get switched off a medication, throw it away. And the best way to throw it away is to flush it down the toilet. Obviously, you want to take it out of the vial first. You're not flushing the vial, but you have to make sure that that's done properly.
And sometimes people have their spouse's medications, their friends and neighbors' medications.
Yeah. Their dogs and cats' medication.
Well, you should only be taking the medication that's prescribed for you. And that was the other point that when you were talking about antibiotics is that the other thing that's most important is taking your medication as prescribed. You know, if one pill makes you feel good, double the pill may not make you feel twice as good.
That's true. It could cause a serious side effect, clearly. And antibiotics need to be taken the full course, as we call
sure.
it, so that you don't partially treat an infection. And what happens then? Why don't you talk about that?
Well,
resistance, antibiotic resistance.
Sure. Anybody who's been in the health or medical fields for even the past 15 years knows how much
how many more antibiotics now are being prescribed, or higher doses of antibiotics because of the resistance that's out there. It's very important every time you go to your doctor not to, you know, demand to be on an antibiotic because you have a runny nose, or maybe you have a little bit of a sore throat or a painful ear. It's very important to, I don't want to say avoid, but avoid until you really need an antibiotic is what I'm saying. Because a lot of the more powerful ones, you know, my friend was put on this new drug, the fluoroquinolone drug, and I want that one too. And I saw this on TV, and I want that one because they only have to take it once a day, and the one you're giving me is twice a day. And that's not really how it works. How it works is you want to take the least expensive, the least powerful one to cure you of the infection you have. And that brings up another important point we didn't say all the way through this, is the point of adherence. And many of the medications and many of the problems that people have, many times they forget to take their medication, they don't take it like they're supposed to, they take it at the wrong times.
I wanted to jump back to the antibiotics.
Sorry.
One of the other things that the listeners need to be aware of is that antibiotics will not cure a cold. It will not cure viruses. It's there to eradicate a bacterial infection. So it is really important. A lot of times you'll have an antibiotic that maybe has a 7 to 10 day course. By the third day, you're feeling great, and you think, oh, I don't need it. But that bacteria is still lurking in your body. It needs to be totally eradicated in order to take care of the problem. Otherwise, what will happen is a few weeks from now, you'll feel bad again. And then that antibiotic may not be able to take care of the problem. You'll have to go to a stronger antibiotic.
And going back to the viruses and bacteria, viruses are very common. And you might be given an antibiotic and you feel better in a few days and you think it's that, but really it's your own body taking care of the viral infection.
That's right.
Certainly people who are frail, that get sick and aren't eating because of their infection, it's a dilemma for doctors what to do. And I think most doctors want to make sure that their patients are treated to the best that they can. And a frail person, they might err on the side of giving an antibiotic just for the rare chance that it might be a bacterial infection. So that's a very difficult thing to have to consider.
It is a fine balance of what is important there. And I think, you know, it's a holistic approach in the sense that you have to eat well in order to maintain your health. It's just not medication. You have to have good nutrition. So many times we see in the elderly where, unfortunately, you're in a situation where people are not eating well, and all of a sudden they're having symptoms, other problems that may not really be related to a disease state, where they're just lacking good nutrition, and then they set themselves up for an infection.
Now, I think, did we cover all four of the points?
I
don't want to throw anything else out there until all four are taken care of. Okay, now, let's go to over-the-counters. And why don't we start with a common drug. I've heard a lot of patients tell me they take this, and I've had to stop it in a lot of patients because of the problems that they were getting. Tylenol PM. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that brings up the point of the brand names and the names that you see of over-the-counter drugs. It's very important to read the label. And it's also very important to talk to your pharmacist. Now, most of these items you can get almost anywhere, even in stores without pharmacies. But it's very important before you grab something over-the-counter, which OTC stands for, over-the-counter, that you discuss with your pharmacist a few things. One, what do you want it for? Okay, and two, what other conditions you have? Because you could be taking something over the counter that's going to interact on prescriptions. Now, what you brought up, Tylenol PM, that's got obviously Tylenol acetaminophen in there, and I believe it also has something known as a calmative to make you feel good, or an antihistamine, diphenhydramine, antihistamine in there to kind of relax you. Okay. Which can be kind of a dangerous thing.
And it's really the side effect of the antihistamine that is helping you to become drowsy and to help with the sleep. And that's why it's marketed as a sleep aid.
Sure.
What problems can an antihistamine cause in older people?
Lots of problems. The antihistamines actually have what we call an anticholinergic effect, where you can get very dry. Constipation is a major problem. Grogginess, the sedation, in which case the Tylenol PM is using that as its effect, but it could cause actually like a hangover the next day. And again, with the elderly, if they're very frail, they're not stable on their feet, it increases that risk for falls. It can adjust their eyesight. It can actually cause blurred vision. And it also can cause mental, what we call mental status changes, where they become very, very confused or very, very lethargic. So here is an over-the-counter product that for somebody years ago, before we had all the new antihistamines out there and we suffered from allergies, it was a great product. I mean, it took care of all those people with hay fever. And as you get older, a product like this, the side effect of the anticholinergic effects can be very detrimental to the elderly.
And you mentioned the mental status changes, the confusion. I've had two patients, one whose mood completely changed. He became extremely depressed, fearful. He was visiting his brother locally. He lived in Florida. And he wasn't able to go back to Florida because he was on this medication. And I saw him and noticed he was on it. We stopped it and watched him closely, and he went back to Florida the following week. Another person hallucinated, was outright hallucinating from the drug. When that was stopped, she settled down and went back to her normal status. So Tylenol PM is one example. Now, what other types of over-the-counters are there out there? There are tons of them out there.
Right. There's a lot of different ones that advertise as a combination product, or maybe not advertise as a combination product. And the ones that I always kind of steer away from when I recommend products are the sinus medications, because they seem to have something for the sinus, such as pseudoephedrine to help clear out your head. But they always throw in a little bit of either Tylenol, or they throw in Advil or Aleve or one of the other drugs out there that for certain people can be dangerous. And somebody who's got GERD is now taking a non-steroidal drug, or like Tina's dad who was on Vioxx, and if he starts taking one of these with a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory in there, that's going to aggravate his stomach even more.
And they also throw in things like Benadryl, the diphenhydramine, the antihistamine, and these are older antihistamines that work very well. It's the only thing we have, but now we have newer medications that act more specifically to problems.
And not only that, these are all combinations which are going to cost even more. And, you know, if you ask your pharmacist, chances are they can recommend that a non-brand name label over the counter, if you want to save money, and only the specific one for your specific problem. If you've got a stuffy head, something like pseudoephedrine over the counter.
Well, also, a lot of these combination products contain acetaminophen, and particularly in the elderly, with all these combination products, you can actually overdose on Tylenol. So you do have to be careful of the different over-the-counter products that you're taking, along with perhaps somebody who's on a prescribed medication like Lortab, which also contains Tylenol. So you do have to take a good look at that. And
the maximum amount of Tylenol in a day is 4 grams, 4,000 milligrams. So if you're on 2 extra strength Tylenol 4 times a day for arthritic pain, that's 4 grams right there.
Right.
And if you add to that anything else, you're in danger of having liver toxicity.
And actually, in some cases in the literature, some geriatricians would say 3 grams is the maximum limit. So you really do have to be careful with that. And that's, again, where you've got open dialogue with your pharmacist. That's what they're there for. You need to pick out your pharmacist no differently than you pick out your physician. You need to have an open dialogue with them. They're supposed to be there to help you. That's what they're there for.
Now, one area also are the cough medications. And my basic approach to cough in a patient, cough is a good thing. It's a reaction of the body to get rid of an infection, by and large, except we talked about cough as a side effect of the ACE inhibitors. But if you have an infection in your lungs, cough is there to help clear that infection. But if you take cough syrup that suppresses the cough, you're going against that natural reaction. I don't know if you want to talk about that. There's guaifenesin, Robitussin, plain Robitussin. There's probably 5 different brands of Robitussin out there now. I recommend generally for my patients plain Robitussin because that's an expectorant. That helps the cough, helps loosen up the problem, and helps clear the infection.
And actually, water is, we were taught in pharmacy school, is the best expectorant. Mm-hmm. Water, just plain water. You know, if you drink adequate amounts of fluid, that will help your body clear out the system.
So does Robitussin, glyphenicin help, or is it a placebo effect?
Or do you not want to comment on that right now?
I just assume. I mean, there was recent things by the FDA that said water was just as good as the glyphenicin was.
As we expected.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, the only other thing you have to watch are people with, you know, anybody with fluid problems or fluid overload problems. You can't really push that much fluid on them. So, I mean, in those kind of instances, that would probably help.
Well, it's recommended to take a lot of water when you take Robitussin, glyphenicin.
That's so right.
Works
even better.
Okay, it works even better. Well, make sure it works. If you didn't have the water, it wouldn't work at all.
Yeah,
I guess that's the point.
I think sometimes there's a misnomer. I've heard nurses say to sip the Robitussin, the glyphenicin, so it coats the throat, but that's not the way it really works. You know, you really need to take water. You need to drink your fluids.
Now, other kinds of over-the-counters you've encountered that are issues or that maybe are good medications. We want to talk about things that are good for people.
Well, I mean, there's very good things over the counter. I want to stress, you know, in the combination products, again, some of them have aspirin in there. And, certain patients have to have low-dose aspirin because of their heart and things of that nature. But other patients have to avoid aspirin. You know, they might be on warfarin or Coumadin and have to avoid it. And that's another reason that even before you reach to the shelf to ask for a recommendation, you should discuss that with your health professional, whether it be your physician or the pharmacist. And then the pharmacist can make a very easy recommendation. I know when I worked full-time as a community pharmacist, I must have made 20 or 30 recommendations a day. People would come in, total strangers, and I say, well, you know, what are the things that you're on? And can you tell me if you have any conditions, you know, like asthma or heart disease or diabetes or anything, things like that? Because many of those medications can affect those conditions very easily.
You know, we talk about, we just touched about herbal supplements. I think that there's a couple issues that we need to be concerned about with herbals. One is that there is no, it's not FDA regulated, so there's no good quality control. So there's a variance from batch to batch depending on when you purchase it. The other thing is that, and this is not to dispute that there is a place for herbal supplements, but we really don't know all the interactions with herbals and medications. St. John's Wort is a great example of that. When it first came out, it's used for depression, and everybody just, you know, thought it was the greatest thing going, and you didn't need a prescription for it. Well, lo and behold, as the public used it more, we found that it had a lot of drug interactions. We had to be concerned about people who were on Coumadin. We're not trying to dispute the fact that herbals don't have a place, but you need to put it in its perspective that if you're on prescription medication, there may be an unknown there of how, whether or not it may interact with your prescription medication.
It's important to note, too, not only with herbals, but different foods that you eat, too. I mean, those will react. You know, I had brought up about
that up,
but drug interactions, but there's also a drug-food interactions. You know, grapefruit is the big thing, and people always ask, can I take that with my grapefruit juice in the morning, or can I have a half a grapefruit?
People know about that.
Yeah, and that, those are important things because those things come out once in a while. Or there's certain antibiotics, as you know, tetracycline, you can't take with milk because that'll bind it up and cause other problems.
Oh, also tetracycline with your antacids, I mean, right. And your calcium supplements. That's a great example of a wonderful over-the-counter product that will help enhance your health.
That's calcium and vitamin D. Yeah.
Correct.
You need vitamin D with the calcium.
To help prevent bone deterioration for osteoporosis. And so that's a very easy thing to take. And it's great to take it. However, you need to remember that if you're going to be on an antibiotic or there's certain medications that may interfere with the absorption of it, so you might have to stagger that. And that's something, again, your pharmacist or your physician can work with you to set that up so it's easy for you to remember and yet you still get the optimal use of your medication.
I can think of one patient that I had one time. You're talking about calcium, and the patient came in a couple weeks later and said, geez, you know, I can't take this calcium anymore. There's something wrong with it. I'm getting all this GI problems, especially gas. I got very bad cramping. I said, well, how are you taking the calcium? I said, well, I take all the tablets at once. And I said, well, you can't do that. Too much calcium in one dose will cause a pretty bad GI symptoms, especially gas. So I said, divide it up. Take it, you know, with each of your meals.
And constipation.
And constipations, right. And lo and behold, a week or two later, came back, I feel fine now. And he said, well, why didn't the doctor tell me that? And I go, well, you know, you're going in the doctor's office, and you're probably a little bit apprehensive about what he's talking about and what you're talking about. And he probably did. But I said, you probably just didn't remember that.
Now, let's try and pull this together, and I'll start with one of the take-home points. With over-the-counters and herbals, I think bring the magnifying glass to the pharmacy.
Definitely.
I need a magnifying glass, or at least bifocals, to be able to read exactly what's in the over-the-counters. And if you're able to do that, you'll start realizing how many different things are thrown in, and you might recognize things that you know are going to hurt you, and you might see things that are going to help that you can talk to the pharmacist about. What other take-home points with regard to over-the-counters and herbal remedies?
Ask a lot of questions. Ask a lot of questions of all your health providers, especially your physician, especially your pharmacist. Those are the people trained to know that.
I don't have anything else to add to that.
Okay. It's the same principles, I think, as prescription, to make sure your doctor, your primary care doctor especially, and your primary pharmacist know all the things that you're buying off the shelves, mm-hmm. including going next door to the health food store and the natural remedy store.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's touch, in the few minutes we have left, on a few issues. One, talk about the Epic card and how people can reduce the cost of medications. We know about the Medicare drug benefit that's mm-hmm. there now, and we won't talk about that in detail because that's a somewhat complicated issue, but what can you tell us about the Epic card and how it might interact and work with the Medicare drug benefit?
I'm very surprised that most seniors, I shouldn't say most, but a lot of seniors don't know about the Epic card. Epic stands for the Elderly Pharmaceutical Insurance Coverage Program offered through New York State. It's off the New York State webpage. People can call me if they want to find out about it. But basically, all they look at is your income. They don't look at your assets or anything else. They just look at how much income you're generating. And I brought some examples in here for you if you wanted just to tell the readers about. But basically, if the person is 65 and older and has an annual income of $35,000 or less, or $50,000 or less if they're married, they can get an Epic card. And basically, all they have to do is meet a deductible. After deductible, they get a copay card. And the copays range from $3 to $20. And I'll give you an example. My father, before I got him on the Epic card, he was spending between $5,000 and $6,000 a year on prescriptions alone. And he had traditional Blue Cross plan. I managed to switch him over to Epic. He meets, I think, a $900 deductible a year. And after that, he spends approximately $120 a month. So, tremendous difference. He spends $2,000 versus $6,000. Great program, and our taxes pay for it.
Well, that information, we'll put a link on the website, whatshouldyouexpect.com, so you can get that information directly. But your pharmacist knows about Epic, so
right.
Ask your pharmacist for an application.
Most pharmacies have applications behind the counter.
Now, we'll just touch on this, and I know it's a raw nerve of sorts. Canadian drugs and internet pharmacies.
Gee, we ought to have a whole show on this.
And I don't have a 6 seconds away on this either.
I have to watch my language a little bit. Dangerous. And I want to say first, I'm not pointing at Canadian pharmacies being dangerous. Let's point at internet pharmacies that could be dangerous. There are a lot of pseudo-pharmacies out there. There are a lot of pharmacies located on the internet that aren't even in the United States, and people don't realize that. There are a lot of internet pharmacies that have sent counterfeit things to their patients. How you can find out a good internet pharmacy? They'll have a little insignia on their website called a VIPS, V-I-P-P-S, Verified Internet Pharmacy Practice Sites. If you click on that, it goes to the VIPS website as a way to spot that. Canadian pharmacies, there are different ways for people to save medication. Epic is just one. They can go to certain clinics. I work at a clinic on Grider Street, Community Health Center in Buffalo. If they go there and go to the pharmacy there, they're able to get through a federal grant, lower prescription prices. You got to look for places like that. The VA hospital is another one because they get a federal through federal funding to do things like that to save money. Doctors have samples. I'm sure you give out samples to your patients who can't afford it.
And there are manufacturers that also have programs where they help those people who are financially needy.
They have couponing for, and again, they have to go through their physician for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. We covered a lot of ground, a lot of important issues today. That was Carl, And Gina Fugelkorn from the UB School of Pharmacy, a vast resource of knowledge here.
Thank you so much for having us
Thank
on.
Thank you.
Well, it was great. Now, to have your medication questions answered, first contact the pharmacy where you got your medications. These are take-home messages. If you need further direction, you can call my guest, Carl and Tina Fugelkorn. Carl's UB office is 645-2824. Or contact the Pharmacist Association of Western New York at 564-0860 on the web at pawny.net or by email pawny99@aol.com. Thanks to the Clovers and Huey Lewis and the News for the songs Love Potion No. 9 and I Want a New Drug. Thanks also to Cheryl Watson and Laura Mondello at Beechwood Continuing Care and Schofield Residence, respectively, for helping me to get the word out about the show. If you'd like to send me a note, please mail it to WHLD, 1270 AM, 225 Delaware Avenue, Buffalo, 14202, or email me at drstall@whatshouldyouexpect.com. For more information and to listen to previous shows, check out the website, whatshouldyouexpect.com. And remember, to call in your questions, dial 855-6848. Next week, I will be joined by Mr. Jimmy Griffin, Buffalo councilman and the former mayor of the city of Buffalo. The topic for discussion, the politics of aging. This is Dr. Rob Stahl. See you next week.
Get older, losing my head, many years from now. Will you still be sending me a valentine, birthday greetings, bottle of wine? If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me, will you still feed me, when I'm 64? Have gone. You can knit a sweater by the fireside. Sunday mornings go for a ride. Doing a garden, digging the weeds. Who could ask for more? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64? Every summer we can rent a cottage in the Isle of Wight if it's not too dear. Shall scrimp and save grandchildren on your knee, Vera, Chuck and Dave. Send me a postcard, drop me a line, stating point of view. Indicate precisely what you mean to say. You're sincerely wasting away. Give me your answer, fill in a form, mine forevermore. Oh, will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm